My name is Ruthie Maloney, and I'm Yuraka Navajo. I guess my main story, why I'm here, is really just really to protect our water and our rivers. You know, I was born in Hoopa. I was born and raised in Hoopa, and I've been on the banks of the Klamath and the Trinity Rivers for my whole entire life. So they're very important to me, and I guess as a child, I played and swam in the rivers with my horse every day. So I guess that's really where my stories are. I guess starts is that as a child, I fished and got to play in the water, and today, with the blue-green algae, it's unsafe for animals and children to be out there swimming in the river. So I look at it like, you know, my childhood memories that I had on the river are no longer, it's no longer safe to play on the river. So I guess that's really my story, in a sense, is that it's important that I protect it from my children's children, and hopefully someday the water will be clean enough for us to swim and conduct our ceremonies like we used to in the past. Solutions. You know, I think for the solution that really needs to happen is that the state of California needs to recognize tribal water rights. They need to recognize the tribal people and indigenous people of the state that they live in. And it's not just a state of California issue, it's a United States and a world issue. You know, indigenous people all over the world have to protect their way of life, and it affects them. And water, there are no boundaries to water. It encompasses the world. Everybody, every human being, every animal, every living thing depends on water. So I think the solutions, it's not just the California, it's the world at large need to come to an understanding that, you know, without water we will cease to exist, animals will cease to exist, and this is a global problem, not just state of California or Arizona. Like I said, water doesn't have any boundaries. And I liked one of the speakers had mentioned that, you know, the rain that we have could have came from Japan. You know, it's a cycle. It's a perpetual cycle, and life is just all around us, and I think we need to remember that. Cultural aspects of our ceremonies that we conduct are all along the banks of the river, but I think our main staple in our livelihood is our salmon. We are fish people. We are the fish people, you know, we are part of them. So I think without, that's a very intricate part of our ceremonies is the feast afterward, you know, and it's the nourishment that it's given us. But I think also it is our basketry materials. You know, I'm a weaver, so I weave and I gather these things. And, you know, I see the difference. You know, I see where the bugs are coming. I see that the materials are no longer as healthy as they used to be. So I have been at a ceremony. When I was growing up, our ceremonies were not conducted like they were. And they're coming back now. So I was raised without traditional knowledge. So I'm as I get older, I've, you know, tried to gain some of that knowledge. And I've been lucky. I have a teacher, my basket teacher, Susan Burdick. They call her Tweet. She's kind of taken me under her wing several times. And I did get to go and perform in a coming out ceremony for a young lady, and I got to be in a bark dress and a little thing of flowers in my hair, and just participating in that ceremony, I felt like I was coming out because I didn't have that I didn't have that ceremony. So sorry. It was what that did for me as a woman. I felt like I was becoming a woman. So I think it's very important nowadays that people continue our traditional ways. And it was conducted by a river. So it was in the moonlight, in the river, and you can't change things like that. You know, that's something that everybody needs to experience. Sorry. Anyway. That made a big difference in my life. It really did. I think after that moment in time, I really, really became to see how important our cultural and our traditional values are.
You're all here, my close relatives. I'm Chris Peters. I'm the president of the Seventh Generation Fund, and I'm Puli Kla, Pechi Kla, or Yurok or Karukara, depending on where you're at on the river. You know, here it talks about planning for 6 months. You know, the fundamental concepts of Seventh Generation Fund is that in each of our deliberation, we consider its impact on seven generations from today. And that philosophy is rooted in many of our tribal cultures and traditions, that we're not looking for today, that we're looking way ahead in our decision-making. And it certainly is apropos for this conversation on water. And, you know, tonight is the, you know, we're going to do some water stories. So let me try to kick it off with the water story. You know, this long time ago, Nathikan'ath, he lived on the Klamath River. And our people were there. They survived by fishing, gathering, and the river was strong. But there at the in the estuary, there lived a serpent. We called them Kamas. And this water serpent, he was hungry, he was vicious. And every time our tribal people would paddle out to do their fishing, he'd come up and he would bite the boat in two and kill the people. When they gathered around the river, Kamas would come up and snatch the people and consume them. And they lived that way for a long time until our spirit beings, Pulikakwerik is a significant being in our tradition, our philosophy. He was a hero. He was a god, if you will. Pulikakwerik came along and people, of course, told him this problem, you know, this water serpent. So, you know, he was also sort of the superhero. He was a superhero. We have a lot of those superheroes in our Indian tradition. So he said, let's build a fire. And, you know, the people who take care of fire are generally the women. He said, bring your cooking rocks, because they gathered the cooking rocks. The cooking rocks could get extremely hot. They could be red hot before they put into the soup to make it, to cook it. So they added all of their cooking rocks to this fire, and the fire blazed higher and higher until the rocks got red hot. Then he took a canoe, and he piled sand in it, and he asked the people to bring the rocks out and put it on the sand. So in this time, this long time ago, Pulikakwerik, he paddled the canoe out into the estuary, and sure enough, here comes Kamas. He was the water serpent. And he came up, and just as he was about to devour the canoe, Pulikakwerik, of course, our superhero, jumps off and swims to shore. But Kamas devoured the canoe with the hot stones. And in due time, Kamas died. The hot stones killed him. So we look to our conversations today, that much of what we talked about is laced in our traditions, our belief systems. And I suggest that we today, as Native peoples, as Indigenous peoples, as Oth, we live in the belly of the dragon. We live in Kamas's belly. But it is our traditions, it is our teachings and our understanding, it is our spiritual belief that are those hot stones that are burning hot in the belly of this dragon. And they'll burn, and they'll burn, and eventually they'll kill the dragon. So much of the conversation today is optimistic, that our traditions are alive, are strong. But we need to look to our traditions, look to our value systems, and look to what we call Indian law. And Indian law, as many of you know, is close to natural law. And natural law protects the mother, keeps things in balance. And at home, we have traditions, we have ceremonies to help set that balance, keep that order. But that's natural law. But humans today, they have breached natural law. They have breached it in such a way that Mother Earth is going to reach out and slap us. And she's going to slap us hard because she's unforgiving and she's relentless. We have breached natural law. Most of the environmental systems in the world are in a status of overshoots. Certainly, global warming is upon us. The Earth is warming. The Earth is warming because we violated natural law. We violated Indian law. And we're going to suffer some consequences for that. Our decisions in establishing our rights, and I hate the word rights because that's not a native word. We don't have water rights, we have water responsibilities. We are responsible for water. We don't have sovereign rights, we have sovereign responsibilities. You know, we don't have human rights, we have rights as human beings. And I think if we think in those contexts and align ourselves again to a traditional belief system, we'll be better off. But those decisions we make, they're more than legal decisions, they're more than political decisions, they're more than legislative decisions. Because in native thinking, native understanding, we know that if we make a decision that is in violation of native rights, excuse me, native law, Indian law, if we make those decisions, it's going to come back on us. And if it doesn't come back on us in this generation, it'll come back on our grandkids, our great-grandkids, or their grandkids. But eventually, the violation of natural law will come back on us. So in terms of your contemplation of water issues, we always need to maintain a strict adherence to traditional teachings, traditional understandings. We need to maintain strict adherence to Indian law and natural law. Natural law says you don't dam a river. You don't divert the water. And if you agree to do it, then it's going to come back on you. You don't pollute the air. You don't mine uranium. You don't mine oil. You don't abuse it, because it's going to come back on us. And like our non-native brothers and sisters who have breached those natural laws, things are going to come back on us. And they're going to come back on us hard. We need to look past, in terms of global warming, hanging on to our water systems. We need to look past that to how do we survive? Because things are changing rapidly. You know, certainly our message to Obama, and we've worked with several of the tribal leaders who are visiting with him tomorrow, to make certain that when our delegation goes to Copenhagen, that they stay there until there is a worldwide commitment to address climate change, a worldwide commitment that says we have to maintain at the minimum 350 parts per billion of carbon in our atmosphere. If we don't do that, then we're straightening the proverbial deck chairs on the Titanic. Things are going to escalate. Already in Alaska, you know, there's at least 28 villages that are impacted by falling into the ocean. In 10 years, that number is going to increase to 178. They're feeling it immediately. You know, certainly it's not at our doorstep yet, but it will be. And I think in terms of looking at water issues, you know, we need to make sure that it's unobstructed, that they're well established, and that we take care of those as a responsibility. We talked today a lot about the California Water Plan. And it's a good document. And I certainly put in a lot of time and as well as other planning committee members to make this event happen. And it's important to have Native people's input into that water plan. But it's a plan. There's no authority to it. You know, no matter how great our ideas are today and tomorrow, it's not going to make the state of California do anything. To be able to do that, we need legislation. We need to be a little more aggressive at moving that legislation forward. Because unless there is a law, the departments are not going to do anything. Unless there is a law, they're going to continue to consult with us. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, the meeting with Obama. Another important issue that we've been trying to move with tribal leaders is certainly the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Peoples. You know, and we talked about free and prior informed consent. If we're a nation, we have nation status, then the state of California needs to respect that nation status and make sure, make certain that we understand what they're doing and that we give them our consent, not consulting, not conversation, not talk, but we understand the issues and we make a decision and we give our consent to action. And that's a nation-to-nation responsibility. But certainly the United States needs to pass that Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Equally important is each of our tribes in California and throughout the nation need to pass that declaration as well. It's hard for us to ask the United States government to take that action if we haven't taken it ourselves. So get a copy of it, review it, amend it to fit your needs, but make sure your tribe adopts it. Water is sacred. As Indigenous peoples, we have a relationship to water. And, you know, our work with the Hopi issue that my sister mentioned earlier. You know, their leadership talks about a phenomenon that opened my eyes. That relationship is that water is our ancestor. We humans, we all that is alive today, are composed of water. When we die, we go back up and we come back down as rain. So rain is our ancestors. You know, science understands the part of evaporation, but they don't understand the phenomenon. The phenomenon is water is our relation. It is sacred. Thank you.